Welcome to Calling All Pets from Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller here with Public Radio's favorite zoologist, Patricia McConnell. And if you need help understanding your animal's behavior, we want to hear from you at 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. In addition to the calls this hour, we'll have another special topic to share, won't we, Patricia?
We will. And you know, for responsible pet owners, like most of our listeners,
sure,
it's really hard to think about rehoming our pet, whether it's a dog or a cat, a bird or a ferret. Most of us bring an animal into our homes with the intention of taking care of it for the rest of its life, right? That's sort of responsible pet ownership. But later this hour, we're going to talk about why, in some cases, rehoming your pet can be the kindest thing you can do for it.
And maybe there's been a time when you've listened to Patricia's training advice and thought, gee, that advice would work on my dog or my daughter, maybe my husband.
Exactly.
Well, today we'll welcome a guest to tell us how animal trainers helped her enhance her relationship with other people. And also, cowboy poet Baxter Black shares a special poem with us in honor of National Poetry Month. What do you think about that? That's still ahead. In the meantime, we'll take your calls at 1-800-462-7413, and we have a caller online, so let's go there. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hi, it's John Mitchell from Longview, Texas.
John, pleasure to speak with you, and what can we do for you?
Well, I had a question about my dog. I have a three-year-old black pug. He has become a rabid fan of the BBC series Planet Earth. Have a really big high definition TV and a Blu-ray player, and this documentary is just his favorite show. He knows the theme music to it, runs into the living room, and gets really attentive to the screen to the point where we have to shove him away and get him down off the entertainment center. And my question was basically, I'd always been told that dogs couldn't watch TV, that they couldn't perceive two-dimensional images. But he doesn't pay attention to normal shows, but when it's an animal show, he's right on the money with it. And I was just curious as to whether or not, you know, that was just a myth or if it was true.
It's a great question because there are some dogs who seem to watch television almost the same way that people do. There's some dogs that are clearly attending to the sound.
Yeah.
You know, and so you get the animal-like sounds, and it gets lots of dogs interested in noises they wouldn't normally be interested in. I don't know if they have some animal sound filter. Like, I know that's a living thing. But here's the interesting research that addresses this very interesting question. The reason we can watch television is because, as we all know, the signal that's actually coming onto the screen is not really a continuous stream of information. It's like those little cartoons where they flick pages really, you know, fast back and forth, and you can see little critters moving. There's a flicker rate. And I don't remember, Larry, I wish I remembered what it was, but there's a flicker rate of so many times per second, there's that actual a picture that flashes onto the screen. And the flicker rate is faster than our ability to resolve those images as separate images. So our brain just flows them all together, so we see this continuous motion. Dogs have a better ability to resolve flicker rate. So what we think some dogs see is not what we see. They don't see this continuous motion. They see this thing flickering back and forth. And I've always wondered if the dogs who watch television, sort of like we do, if they weren't quite as good as other dogs at resolving this flicker rate. So that's complete speculation, but it's based on this research that we know about how dogs can perceive different visual signals differently than humans.
And, you know, I'm wondering with the high-definition television.
Oh,
now,
that's a good point.
Whether this change is going to mean that more dogs are going to be able to watch the television.
That's a good point. I'll tell you one thing I know for sure. I want to watch Planet Earth on his television because that's one of my favorite television shows as well. And I have friends who have big, huge screen TV that's high-D, and I watched Planet Earth on it once, and it was like, wow!
It is like, wow, I have one of those in my, you should come to my place.
Well, I'm just waiting. Was that for what
that's
name
an invitation.
Time? When am I coming? I'll bring some hors d'oeuvres.
Oh, man. So I hope that answers your question, John.
Oh, certainly. Thanks a lot.
We've invited ourselves to your house, basically.
Thanks a lot for calling. Patricia, it's time to take a look at our email inbox. And we heard from Jeannie in Spring Valley, Wisconsin. Jeannie has a 12-year-old border collie, and for almost a year now, she's refused to drink from a bowl. During the summer, she drinks from mud puddles, bird baths, old tires, anything outside that holds water.
Yuck!
Yeah, when the weather turns cold, she refuses to drink from a bowl and will only go outside and eat snow. Jeannie's tried every type of bowl, round, square, glass, tin, plastic, colored, clear. She's tried warm water, cold water, and even brought in snow and put it in various bowls. Still, she has not had any luck, and she's really worried about dehydration. What can Jeannie do to get her dog to drink more water?
Well, first we can get my jaw off the table.
Your jaw
it's dropped. Because we hear about this with cats. It's a very common problem with cats. They don't like to drink out of bowls. We think they can't find the surface of the water. Because we know from research that their eyes, they don't see very well. They're farsighted, not nearsighted. But I've never heard of this with dogs. And my only explanation is that it's that typical superstitious behavior, we all call it, is that something happened. Her tags clinked against the side of the bowl when she went to drink. You know, her dog tags from her collar, and the noise scared her. Or she got a shock or something. She was on the carpet, and she put her tongue down. She got a shock. And so she's just remembered that for some reason as being a scary thing to do. I'll tell you, nobody's better than a border collie at acting just a little crazy sometimes. I can say that because I have them. So here's what I'd suggest, though. And I wish she was on the line right now, because what I want to ask her is, if your dog eats from a bowl, if your dog eats dinner from a bowl, then can't we just, one, add water to the dinner? I do that all the time, partly because I have an older dog. She has kidney issues, and so she drinks her dinner, basically. But I do that with my younger dogs as well, because why not? Especially if you feed kibble.
Be a little more palatable anyway. You think.
Some animals think it's a little bit more palatable. Yeah, that moisture and warmth, if you use warm water, sort of brings out some of that taste. But as well, in order to eat their dinner, they have to also basically eat/drink a lot of water. So assuming the dog will eat dinner out of a bowl, that's what I would try doing. So I'm just going to leave it there and hope that that's going to work. And if it doesn't, then she should email us back and we'll go from there. Or better yet, call and we can talk to you in person.
And how do people email us, by the way?
Oh, we love to hear from you. And maybe you have an idea about this issue.
Yeah.
Maybe you've had a dog who's had this problem. If you have, let us know. And just send us an email to pets@wpr.org.
And if you'd like to phone us, the number to call 1-800-462-7413. And we have another caller online, so let's go there. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for calling. And who are we speaking with?
My name is Clementine.
And where are you calling from?
From Annapolis, Maryland.
Well, what's up with you, Clementine?
Well, we have this little miniature dachshund that we adopted. We adopted her about, 3 weeks ago. And she has I've had many dogs, and they've all done strange things, but this one, I'm not sure what to make of it. She hoards toys, anything that's soft, some of it that has our scent, and she takes it in various places of the house, runs back and forth guarding all these different places, but continues to kind of create these stashes that get bigger and bigger and bigger. And mainly she protects them from the other dogs, not so much, but a little bit also from us. She's not very aggressive, so she just gets very upset when we come near them and take things, because sometimes we need our socks back. And, so we're not sure why it's not even so bad, but why would she be doing this? She's spayed, so I assume it's not nesting. I don't know.
But well, I think your thought about nesting is actually right on. Even spayed females can go through these phases or get into a behavior and not get out of it after they're spayed of acting maternally towards little soft puppy-like objects. And I've seen it. I've even seen males do it, although that's obviously much rarer. But even spayed females can do that, and she really sounds like she's gathering this litter together, and acting somewhat maternally towards it. You know, one of the bonds, I think, between people and dogs is that we're one of the very few mammalian species. This is very rare in mammals, where as an individual, we will take over the care of the newborn of another individual. And that's just not that common. You know, I'm lambing right now. I have little lambs being born right now. And if you have trouble with a ewe, you have a little orphan lamb, it's a big problem getting another ewe to take care of that lamb. It's like, she's not mine. But dogs and people both are species who are full of all this parental kind of motivations. And sometimes that just gets a little out of the box and, you know, a little dysfunctional in a kind of a good way. So, you know, bless your heart for getting this little mini dachshund. How old is she, by the way?
That's the other thing. She's only 7 months old. Mm-hmm. So I was, is this a time that she would be going into heat usually? Or is that something? Or is she too young for this? And what do we do about all the different stashes everywhere?
Yeah.
You know, one stash would be okay, but like three or four.
It's almost as though you have two issues. One is that she's being hyper maternal, and the other, it's almost as though she's got a kind of obsessive compulsive disorder. You haven't had her long, and so that's the good news. What I would try doing, first of all, is get her very well exercised. You know, we know that exercise can change physiology. It doesn't cure everything. There's no question about it. If it's true obsessive compulsive disorder, exercise is probably going to have no effect on it, actually, whatsoever. But sometimes, especially if it's in the early stages, you can have a big effect. So I would give her lots to do with her brain. I would teach her lots of tricks. I would get her a lot of physical exercise. I'll give her lots and lots of mental exercise. I would not correct her. I would try and block access to a couple of her little stashes. Go ahead and let her keep doing her stashes as long as you're keeping her interacting with the family. I don't want her to start to withdraw and lie in the corner with her little pseudo puppies.
Yeah. Okay, that's great advice, actually. So we'll keep maybe one or two places that she can protect.
And hopefully she'll get less and less interested in it.
And do a better job than I do of picking up your socks and putting them in the hamper.
Don't, right. Well, she'll go into the hamper, but never mind.
Thanks, Clementine.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate the call. You can join us at 1-800-462-7413. Coming up next, find out why rehoming an animal can be the kindest thing you do for it. I'm Larry Mueller with Patricia McConnell, and this is Calling All Pets from Wisconsin Public Radio.
The Calling All Pets website offers a variety of information, including online archives of the show, pet tips, Patricia's dog training books, and the opportunity to submit email questions. The website is callingallpets.org. Pet books and training guides are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444.
Welcome back to Calling All Pets. I'm Larry Mueller with Patricia McConnell. And Tricia, you know, sometimes we bring an animal into the family and the animal never feels quite at home. And I know it can seem like a betrayal to rehome a pet. You say it might be the best thing to do for an animal.
You know, sometimes it is. And boy, it can be a really hard decision to make. But, you know, if your environment is not the right place for a particular animal to flourish and be happy, then it's truly responsible. You know, greater love hath no owner than to find it the right home. You can sort of think of it like sending your kid off to the right college when they're ready. And keep in mind that finding the right home for your animal, if your home is not the right one, it doesn't mean you're surrendering them, you know, to, or abandoning them. I don't want you to take them to some overburdened shelter. But if you really know that animal, I mean, I think that's our job, is to get to know who that animal is and figure out who he or she really needs. And sometimes you may not be able to provide it. And let me give you an example from my own life. I had a border collie named Scotty. He was the puppy of my first border collie, Drift. I picked him as a puppy. I raised him. I trained him. I even won some herding dog trials with him. And I loved him. But Scotty hated change. He was one of those dogs who needed a routine that stayed the same every day. And here I was traveling all over the country. I had house sitters coming and going. I had lots of visitors coming to the farm, lots of clients coming to the farm. And he didn't like that. It was really hard on him. And all he wanted to do was work sheep. He was not one of those border collies. He didn't want to play ball. He didn't want to get belly rubs. No. He didn't want to get petted. He didn't want to go on walks. He just wanted to work sheep. And at the time, I had 5 border collies and 9 sheep. And he never, Larry, he never seemed happy. So I placed him with a wonderful family. They had a huge farm. They had hundreds of sheep. They needed a dog to work. Lots and lots and lots. It was really, oh, it was so hard to say goodbye. I cried so hard driving the truck back. I had to pull over. But after a couple of days, it was like this huge burden had been lifted off my shoulders. And he was so happy. I saw him 3 days later, and he was just as happy as a clam.
So it was a tough decision, but ultimately, I guess the right one. How do we know when it's time to think about rehoming a pet?
It's hard to think about. I've seen a lot of people really responsible. It just broke their hearts. But here's some things to keep in mind. If you're always feeling guilty because you're unable to give your pet what you know that he or she needs, if you're always frustrated, and maybe you're getting some marital issues, and I've seen a lot of that, because things just aren't going well, or if there's danger, you know, one of your other pets is in danger, or one of your family members is in danger, then you might want to seriously think about finding a good home for this animal where he or she would be better off. And most importantly, if you're at that stage, bring in somebody objective. Bring in an animal behaviorist, a trainer, talk to your vet, talk to a local rescue group. Get some objective expert advice. You know, it's always great to bring in a coach.
Yep, it makes a lot of sense, but it's a very tough thing to go through.
Oh,
I'm sure of that.
It can be really hard, but it's sometimes greater love hath no owner.
Well, I tell you what, I am ready to take some more calls. How about you?
We don't have to rehome ourselves to do it.
We don't
have
to.
We can just sit right here.
We'll do it at 1-800-462-7413. And here is another caller. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hi, this is Mark from Granbury, Texas.
Mark, thanks a lot for calling. How can we help you?
Well, my question is regarding cat behavior. I have a male cat. His name is Igor. And occasionally, when I'm laying down or sitting down, he'll jump up and climb up on my chest and then proceed to push down on my chest with his front paws, alternating first one, then the other, back and forth, sort of like someone would knead bread dough.
Yep. It's called kneading.
This activity continues for sometimes 5 minutes, although if I've recently been away on a trip for a few days, it might continue for as long as 20 minutes, after which he lays down and falls asleep on my chest.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when he's doing this, he purrs, so I'm wondering if this is a sign of affection or contentment, and what originates this behavior?
You know, it's a great question, and we know exactly what is the origin of this behavior. That is the action that kittens perform when they're nursing from their moms. So your job now is to, start making milk. and I'm sure you've been pulling that off. No, that kneading, it's really common. You can see some dogs do it too, although it's much more common in cats. But I have a dog, my dog Lassie does it. And it's a way of soothing themselves. It does seem to be something that animals who... Well, it's interesting. It's mixed because my border collie, Lassie, does it when she's stressed. And it's a kind of a self-soothing, self-medicating kind of behavior. It actually increases the amount of serotonin in the brain. So it changes the neurotransmitters in her brain so that she feels comforted. But we also know that animals do it when they appear to be contented and comfortable. My guess is that your cat is very, very fond of you. And that's one of her ways of settling in and getting contented and comfortable and expressing her bond with you. The fact that she does it a little longer after you've been out of town supports that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's in your case, I think it's a very friendly, loving thing to do. And you're just like a great big mama cat.
Okay, thank you very much.
Dev, thanks very much for calling. You know, you mentioned that you have lambs and sheep as lambing season. I was watching some lambs feeding, speaking about this whole business, and I noticed this last weekend, as a matter of fact, the lambs kind of push a little hard on the udder of the sheep. Is that sort of the same process that you're talking about with the kid?
It is. That's exactly right. They are pushing on that udder to stimulate milk letdown, and that's what that kneading is. It also mm-hmm. stimulates milk down. When the lambs get a little older, Larry, they get so big and they push so hard that the hind end of the ewe sometimes literally raises up off the ground. So you get twins and they'll push up and the poor little ewe, her whole hind quarters can go a foot off the ground. I'm serious.
It's a lot of fun to watch it and really
yeah,
a great
it
sight
is.
To
I'll
see.
Bet your daughter loved it.
Oh, yeah, she really
oh,
did.
Emily, yeah.
Oh, here's the number for you to call to join in, 1-800-462-7413. And Here's our next caller. Hi, you're at Calling All Pets.
Hi, this is Tom from Hollandale, Wisconsin.
Tom, thanks a lot for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, I have a little Springer Spaniel. She's 6 years old, black and white, cute as a button, of course.
Oh, Springers are.
And she's a perfect companion and a great pheasant hunting dog, believe it or not, even at that size. And she's very well trained. She heels and sits and comes to a whistle. But I have one little problem. If I am in a campground, for example, or in a motel room with the dog, and I try and go someplace else, like walk over to another campsite or go to the restroom or something, she will not behave. She whines. My suspicion is she thinks I'm going to go hunting without her, which I'm not. And I'd like to stop that behavior because it annoys people in the campsite.
I would think.
Yeah, there's an ethic when you're at any kind of a event in which you have working dogs, whether it's a herding dog trial or you're hunting with your dogs. It's just there's an uncool factor about having your dog be the one. Or in a campground who's whining or barking. And I like your hypothesis that she's frustrated. I want to go with you. There's another possibility, which is that she's anxious or scared. Don't leave me alone. I'm in a strange place. I don't want you to go. And it could be a combination, which is very common, of a little bit of that. You know, I'm excited. Mm-hmm. I want to go with you. Oh, don't leave me. I've never been here before. You're my guy, and I love you so much. So this is when food comes to the fore. Now, it may not work, because when animals get stressed, their appetite shuts down. So this might not work, but this is the time I would take one of those hollow toys and I would stuff it with the best food known to dog and man. Mm-hmm. Maybe to man, because with dogs it'd be like a, you know, dead fish or something, you know, some really good, wonderful canned chicken or something. So before you go on a trip, stuff some Kongs, freeze them, take them with you, put them in your cooler. And then when you're going to go, say you're going to go take a shower at the campground, just give your dog one of these stuffed Kongs. And keep her away from the other dogs so you don't end up with a big dog fight over it. But see if that will help. Sometimes you need to ease her sort of into that a little bit. You can't just wait till you're camping. You might want to get her used to you going away. But that's what I would try first. That's the easiest thing to do, and it well might just work right off the bat.
And good luck, and thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call.
She sounds like such a good dog.
Yeah.
What a sweetie.
And Tom sounds like a pretty good guy, too.
He does.
Here's the number for you to call, 1-800-462-7413. Give us a call. Tricia, we heard from Bobby in Palmer, Alaska, who'd like your advice about a nosy kitten. Here's what she writes. My 7-month-old kitten, Scruples, likes to press his face against mine with his nose to my nostril and push very hard. I can avoid this violent nasal inspection during the day by distracting him and turning my face, but it tends to interrupt my sleep when he does it at night.
I can imagine.
Why does he do this? And more important, how can I get him to stop? My husband suggests a hockey mask.
That'd be comfy. I don't know. I wouldn't want my husband to want me to wear it.
No.
Ooh, that'd be hard to kiss your honey goodnight with, I think. But it certainly would protect your nose. And I certainly get how at 3 o'clock in the morning or so, having the little kitten jam his nose into your nostril might not be the best sleeping medication. You know, why does he do this? Well, I don't know. He might be trying to wake you up. You know, that kind of head rub is very affectionate. So that's a good thing. This is a very affectionate thing for a feline to do. I've seen lions head rub and headbutt other lions just, so hard. So be lucky it's not a lion with a head the size of an oven who's doing that. He could push you out of bed. But what you're left with, and this is the problem with this is one of those behaviors that you can't just ignore. So if I were you, I would try a kind of an interruption, basically, is when your kitten starts to do it. I actually did this with a cat who used to wake me up at night doing something similar. Every time my cat, Shaw, French for cat, would start to push against me, I would make a little startle. Like, you know how sometimes when you're asleep and your muscles contract all of a sudden really fast? So when Shaw would push against me, I'd go, ah! Now, it's not restful. Husband's not going to like it either. But it stopped the cat. And it took me, you know, maybe
5 years.
I'm still not sleeping well, Mueller. No, it took me maybe 6-8 days.
Oh. Well, that's not so bad.
It's after the eighth night, it got a little old, but the frequency radically decreased. If it hasn't decreased after three nights of doing that, then take some aspirin and call us in the morning, and we'll come up with plan B. But I think that was probably going to work for
you. That should work. Thanks a lot for that question, by the way, email question. And how do people email us?
Oh, they just send us an email to pets@wpr.org. And maybe you have a cat who was a little nosy as well and have some advice for our listener.
Okay. And maybe you have a question that you want to phone in, and that's at 1-800-462-7413. Coming up next, find out what Shamu can teach you about life, love, and marriage. I'm Larry Mueller with Patricia McConnell, and you are listening to Calling All Pets from Wisconsin Public Radio.
The Calling All Pets website offers you the opportunity to submit email questions, browse pet tips, and find out when Patricia will be in a city near you. Information online at callingallpets.org. That's callingallpets.org. Pet books and training guides are also available through the radio store at 800-747-7444.
Welcome back to Calling All Pets. I'm Larry Mueller with Patricia McConnell, and today we welcome Amy Sutherland to the program. Amy is the author of the book, What Shamu Taught Me About Life, Love, and Marriage, Lessons for People from Animals and Their Trainers. And she joins us today to talk about some of the lessons she learned. Amy, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You've come to use the word Shamu as a verb.
Uh-huh.
Who's Shamu, and what does it mean to Shamu?
Well, Shamu is sort of the generic name they use for all the killer whales at SeaWorld. And it ended up in the title of my book because it was in the headline of the column that the book is based on. So I really owe Shamu to a New York Times headline writer deep in that building somewhere. But what I liked about the sort of use of Shamu as a metaphor is that this way of thinking and training really comes out of the marine mammal world. So it makes sense in that way. It's the working like this is why we can work with, you know, one of the top predators of the ocean and not get bitten. But the way we made it into a verb was, it's actually a friend of mine first thought it up, but my husband and I, who both are writers and maybe abuse words on occasion, is that it's a shorthand for basically saying, how can you use the principles of progressive animal training to solve this annoying problem with this human?
You used it operant conditioning.
Yeah, right.
Right.
It's like it's more fun than saying, how can you use operant conditioning?
Right. Right.
You know, I mean, that's the thing for me is that, you know, this is all, I mean, you all know, it's all solid science, but the animals and sort of the fun of the animals really brings this science to life for me.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of fun with animals, you've spent a lot of time in the last several years with professional animal trainers who work with a lot of exotic wild animals, and you tell some wonderful stories in your book about how animals are better trainers than we are often.
Yeah.
Would you tell us some of those stories that you tell in the book about animals training the animal trainers?
One of the funny stories I tell in the book is even how some of the animals start to use some of the techniques, the actual techniques on the trainer. And one is I heard a story about a zookeeper who let a chimpanzee out into its yard at the National Zoo. And this is what a chimpanzee that had been trained. And in return, the chimpanzee handed the keeper a piece of celery.
I love that one.
So
you write a chapter called Know Your Species.
Right.
What if the species in question is the American husband? Speaking as a husband myself, what tips do you have here?
Well, you know, I use that whole, I mean, what I found so compelling about the way trainers work with all these different species is just the amount of information they learn about them. Even, you know, it's not just enough to know that you're working with a tiger. You have to know everything about that specific tiger and what it's like personality-wise, because not all tigers are alike. And, you know, so I use that as a sort of lens to look at the humans in my life. And we do sort of fall in kind of, you know, species and subspecies. And there is the species husband. And, you know, I guess the generalization I would make is that a lot of husbands, I say in the book, are known to sort of hibernate during the winter, which is called football season, hockey season. And some hibernate in the summer, which is known as baseball season. But, you know, I mean that in the most loving way. So what I really did, though, is, despite making bad jokes, was is to use that sort of approach to think about, to really, you know, remind myself that every time I interact with somebody in my life, that they are their own person. And what, I mean, that sounds corny, but it's easy to forget that what motivates them or what they don't like is very unique to them and what they're capable of.
So tell us about something your husband did that you use basic operant conditioning principles, which we talk about on the show all the time, by the way. You talk about positive reinforcement. So listeners are really up on a lot of those principles. So talk about how you use that to change a behavior of your husband that you didn't like.
Well, the main one that I usually bring up, because it's easy to explain, but it's also, I think, a very common experience for a lot of people, and that is that my husband loses his temper over losing things, and he loses things with some regularity. And as I've pointed out, that he loses his keys and his wallet are the two things that go missing, and then his baseball cap is the new one on the scene. But, you know, the thing was that it wasn't so much that he lost his keys, but it was the losing his temper. And so I would always spring into action when this would happen, being, you know, trying to be Miss Helpful Wife, you know, calling out suggestions. Or I would sometimes lose my temper back as a way to sort of squash his temper, and that never failed to not work. But what would happen was is that, you know, lost keys was suddenly the mini drama starring Amy and Scott. And when I really started, the aha moment for me is so that he lost his keys again, and I heard the temper start up. And I did, you know, what these trainers would do, is that this is behavior I don't like, I don't want, so just ignore it. And that's what I did, which is very counterintuitive to me, because I'm usually, you know, miss jump in, dive in, talk about it, you know, get involved. But I, you know, just kept cleaning the kitchen. And in short order, he not only found his keys, but he had lost his temper, but it was really over quickly. And it was a real epiphany for me that I had basically been fueling this drama all these years.
You know, I your book reminded me of a story of something I did actually originally inadvertently. I was dating someone who used to joke around by using that obnoxious voice from Beavis. Remember Beavis and Butthead?
Yeah. My husband could do that too, just by the way.
And I didn't like it. And inadvertently once, Larry, I made one of those embarrassing snorting noises, you know? I didn't mean to, but we both stopped. And then we pretended it didn't happen, but he stopped doing what he was doing.
Because he disliked that so much.
And, well, it just interrupted him. It was like interrupting the behavior.
Oh, so, yeah, that's like, yeah.
The next time
the
I did it on purpose.
Yeah.
And then he started doing it less and less and less, and it was a really smart guy, though, and after a couple of days he turned to me and said, "You're doing that on purpose, aren't you?" And luckily he thought it was great, and then he never did it after that.
Yeah. And, well, that was brilliant.
And Amy, your husband also discovered that you were using those training tips on him. How did he react when he discovered this?
Well, you know, my husband, I mean, we both really learned these principles when we were training our Australian Shepherd. So when I went off to do my book on the exotic animal training school, Scott was already sort of versed in operant conditioning. But he wasn't, you know, some people think that he'd be offended, but he wasn't, because he knew the ideas and how productive they are.
You know, there are some people who say you're not training your husband, you're manipulating your husband.
Yeah.
How do you respond to that?
Well, I mean, to me, that's like, I mean, a few things. One is, we're all trying to change each other's behavior all the time. You know, we sort of go through our days, you know, doing little things and big things to get people to do what we want. Most of us do this in kind of like an old school bad circus trainer way, with lots of punishment and criticism and nagging. And so to me, it's like, you know, we're already trying to change each other's behavior, so why not do it in a more constructive, thoughtful way?
And effective way. It works a lot better.
The other thing is that manipulation sort of implies that you're getting people to do things against their will. And, you know, in a dream world, I would get my husband to, like, get all my, you know, my coffee ready in the morning and lay my clothes out for me and all that. But, you know, even that's not going to happen. And, you know, the way this works is you can't get people to do things they don't want to do. It's based on the fundamentals of them doing things that they want to do, that they're getting encouragement for.
Have you used these principles, I'm sure you have, outside of your marriage on other people as well?
I mean, I'm sure this works this way with you guys, too. I mean, once you sort of start thinking this way, it just goes, it's just a way of looking at everybody. So, I do use it sort of in general in how I interact with people. It sounds kind of corny, but to me, it almost becomes sort of a philosophical way to approach your life.
What does it mean to go back to kindergarten, as you say, and why is it important that we do that once in a while?
Well, the trainers use that term for when a trained behavior that the animal knows starts to break down for some reason. And so what they'll do is just basically back up and sort of quickly retrain the behavior, go back through the steps. And I use that in my own life with humans as a way to think about the fact that sometimes we have to back up. I think especially probably, I don't have children, but I would think this would be pretty apropos to people with their kids. I mean, just because somebody's generally been behaving well for a long time, and all of a sudden when they start acting up for some reason, it's maybe time to sort of back up and retrain and go back to kindergarten. And maybe in our relationships, too. It just sort of reminds me that we always should think of all the different ways we can sort of get at these behavioral problems.
I hear people all the time say things like, I know he knows better.
Yeah.
And my answer is so.
Yeah, I know. That's
what does
the
that
thing.
Have to do with being consistent? You know, are you always consistent? You know?
Right.
If you could share with our listeners one single most important technique you've learned from animal trainers that would help us all improve our relationships with others, what would it be?
Oh, Lord.
the jackpot message here.
I don't know. You know, I mean, this is not so much operant conditioning, but what I really liked about the way the trainers worked was that if something isn't working, they don't keep trying it. They go to plan B, C, D, E, F. You know, so often with us, when whatever we're trying, which is usually punishment, even though it's clearly not working, and if you're repeating yourself a lot, that's the first obvious sign that it's not. We stick with it and lay it on thicker instead of trying to, you know, think what else we could do or try something else or just at least become aware of what we're doing isn't working.
I think that's so good. There's a trainer saying that if you try something three times and it doesn't work after three, it ain't going to work after four or 30.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know. It's like people in a foreign country, you know, where they say something in English and when the person doesn't understand, then they say it again louder.
Right.
Well, I enjoyed your book very much, Amy, and I appreciate you taking time to be with us today. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed talking with both of you.
Amy Sutherland is the author of What Shamu Taught Me About Life, Love, and Marriage. She joined us today from her home in Boston, Massachusetts. Stay tuned. Our animal trivia question of the week is next with your chance to win a copy of Amy's book. I'm Larry Mueller with Patricia McConnell, and this is Calling All Pets from Wisconsin Public Radio.
If you missed an episode of Calling All Pets, the show is available online. Our website offers archives of the show, along with the opportunity to submit email questions, browse pet tips, and learn more about a guest you heard on the program. More information available online at callingallpets.org. That's callingallpets.org.
You're listening to Calling All Pets. I'm Larry Mueller, along with Public Radio's favorite zoologist, Patricia McConnell. And it's time now for our animal trivia question of the week. If you think you know the answer to this week's question, call our 800 number or send an email to pets@wpr.org. All correct guessers will have their names pooled together, and two winners will be selected at random to win a copy of What Shamu Taught Me About Life, Love, and Marriage by Amy Sutherland. And here's today's question. In her book, Amy talks about Mabel Stark, a world-famous tiger trainer of the 1920s. One night in 1928, Mabel stepped into the cage with her two tigers, Sheik and Zoo, and was attacked by the big cats. It turns out this attack might have been prevented if Stark or her colleagues hadn't forgotten to do what before the night's circus act. If you think you know the answer, call our 800 number or send an email to pets@wpr.org. And to find out if you're correct, visit callingallpets.org. We'll have the correct answer posted online in about a week. And now it's time for another call at 1-800-462-7413, and we have a caller online. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure, who are we speaking with?
This is Lori.
Lori, and where are you from?
Ashburn, Virginia.
Ashburn, Virginia. Well, what's on your mind?
Well, I have a great four-year-old Minpin. His name is Hershey, and I adopted him from a shelter a few months ago. The first problem is Hershey is not housebroken,
okay.
And he goes all over the house. In fact, he has decided that he should only poo in the house and not outside.
Oh, dear.
Warmer on his little doggy tush. But the second problem is I am unable to housebreak him because I go to school from 7 a.m. till noon, Monday through Friday. I get home about 1 o'clock, change clothes, and then go to work from 2 to 10 p.m. So I'm pretty much unable to be around to housebreak him, and so he continues to go all over the house.
Is he just loose in the house when you're gone?
He is. I tried to crate him when I first got him, but there was no way. He barked, he screamed, he cried. I'm at a loss.
Poor thing. You know, there are some dogs who just can't go into crates, even when you ease them into it. Now, easing them into it can help tremendously. But since the crate's not working out, I would get like an X-Pen, which is sort of a portable little fence that you can make into a circle. You could put it on a linoleum floor or a wooden floor, maybe in your kitchen somewhere, and then you can put pillows and dog beds and water in there. And if he has accidents in there, at least he's not having them all over the house. So you need to find a way to restrict him so that he's not going all over the house. And then anytime he has access to the rest of the house, you have to be there every single second. You need to treat him like a little tiny puppy. But in a way, he's even harder because he's already learned to go around the house. I would start taking him outside like he was a little puppy with treats in your hand. And I would basically, what you need to do, starting like tonight, what you need to do is you're going to take him outside and ask him to go potty, take him on a walk. If he doesn't go, take him back in the house, but keep him on a leash and keep him right with you. Just keep him right with you and then take him out again in 10 minutes and then take him out again if you have to in 10 minutes. The first couple of days are going to be very intense here. But give him a treat as soon as he finally goes outside. Good boy, treat, treat, treat. Really good treats, not a big biscuit made out of wheat, but a little piece of something really tasty. Other issue I want you to figure out how to deal with this work schedule. First of all, you poor baby.
Yeah, that's a lot of work.
Poor girl. You're working way too hard here, girl.
Well, you know.
Somebody needs to come help this woman. But actually, you do need help because your little Minpin is not going to be able to go that long. 2 to 10 is a particularly difficult time. You know, evening is a time a lot of dogs need to go potty. I would do everything you could to find a friend to come in, find a neighbor, find somebody to come in, and let your dog outside.
You know, I have a friend who has a very small dog, and they got a kitty litter situation, and the dog uses it.
They're actually commercial pads that supposedly smell a little bit like urine that you can teach your dog sometimes to go on. I would love for her to try to get this dog to go outside first. It might take quite a while. You're going to have to be very patient and very consistent.
Good luck, Lori. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. 1-800-462-7413, our number to call. And we have another caller online. Let's go there. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hi, this is Michelle from Richmond, Virginia.
Michelle, thanks a lot for calling. What's up with you?
Well, I'm having an issue with one of my cats. My cat Jake scratches on my new couch, and he only seems to scratch when my fiance and I are sitting on it and watching TV. He has a scratch post that he shares with my other cat. However, the other cat is kind of territorial about the post. So whenever Jake comes over to scratch, he doesn't get a lot of time at the post because the other one runs him off.
Mm.
I'm starting to think that he's doing it just for attention because I yell at him when he scratches on the couch.
Boy, that makes a lot of sense, at least in part, especially since he does it when your fiancé is there. And you probably have moved some of your attention over to the human in the house rather than to Jake himself. So I think that's a very good possibility. And also remember that scratching is a lot about marking territory. So your comment was really important. You said the other cat tends to protect, as it were, that scratching place. Well, scratching in the first place is a way of defining your territory. So it makes sense that that cat would say, this is completely my place because I'm doing this to show you that this is my place. And this is my place to show you that this is my place. So the first thing I would do is I would get at least one more scratching post. You know, there's just this town ain't big enough.
One scratching post isn't enough for the two of us.
Yeah, I guess that's probably a better way to say it. So get another scratching post. But here's one of the tricks is get a scratching post that fits the substrate or the material that your problem cat likes best. They're very picky about what they sink their claws into. And a lot of the commercial ones, they're tippy. Cats hate that. They don't like – there's some that have jute fiber that goes horizontally across. Lots of cats hate those. They can't get the right action if the fibers go too strongly horizontally. So look at what your cat is wanting to sink his claws into. If he likes carpet, go buy carpet samples and construct some kind of a really solid kind of scratching place. I would put it right beside the couch. You can make it nice looking, get a carpet that's a nice color. You can turn it into a little table, you know, have a nice surface on the top. Have your fiance create this, you know, help you create this.
It'll be a good test for him.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, good. It's an evaluation tool. So you can create this little piece of furniture that you can use on the top. Your cat can use it as a scratching area. It's carpeted on the sides. And then I want you to spray maybe citrus spray on the carpet. That may work. If it's pretty strong, cats will tend to stay away from it. But, you know, they're not putting their noses right into the couch when they're scratching their claws on it. So it may or may not work. Meanwhile, the other thing I would do just really quickly is be sure to give your cat lots of attention when he's not scratching when your fiancé comes over. Even better, basically explain to your fiancé, love me, love my cat. You don't need flowers, you don't need candy, but what you need is him to throw treats to your cat and play with your cat. See how all that works.
And good luck. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Michelle. 1-800-462-7413, the number to call. That's 1-800-462-7413. Well, April is National Poetry Month, and we've called on cowboy poet Baxter Black to help us celebrate. Today's poem pays tribute to one of the hardest-working dog breeds on the planet, the Border Collie.
Just a word about one of the greatest genetic creations on the face of this earth, the Border Collie. Faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall fences in a single bound. The dog that all sheep talk about but never want to meet. The fur that legends are made of makes coyotes cringe. Sheep trip the light fantastic and eagles soar somewhere else. Invested with the energy of a litter of puppies, the work ethic of an illegal immigrant, and the loyalty of Lassie, they ply their trade on sagebrush flats, grassy fields, and precipitous peaks from sea to shining sea. Away to me, I command. They streak and sail, zipping like pucks on the ice, black and white hummingbirds in, out, up, down, come by. Sheep, with head up, one eye cocked over their shoulder, asking directions. To the gate, through the race, mighty dog moves behind the bunch like a towboat pushing barges around a bend. and heart do they try. Just let me at him, Dad. Stay. Come on, I'm ready. Stay. Can't you feel me humming? Listen to my heart. It's purring like a cat. I am primed. Aim me. Point me. Pull the trigger. Away to me. It makes me feel like Robin Hood. He leaves my side like an arrow. Working dogs is like manipulating a screwdriver with chopsticks, like doing calligraphy with a plastic whip, like bobbing for apples, like threading a needle with no hands, like playing pool on the kitchen table. There are no straight lines in nature, only arcs, great sweeping curves of sight and thought and voice and dog, always having to lead your command about a dog's length. Sheep, bunched like logs on the river. Dogs paddling in the current, always pushing upstream. A ewe breaks loose, then another, another. The log jam breaks. Dogs and sheep tumble about in the white water. And then, calm again, they start back upstream. Border collies. Are they truly smarter than a chimpanzee? Cuddlier than a koala? More dedicated than Batman's valet? Can they change course in midair? Drag Nell from the tracks and locate the missing microfilm? Yes, I believe they can. They are the best of the best. The epitome of above and beyond the call of duty. Head dog, top gun, I salute you. For man has never had a better friend.
That was cowboy poet Baxter Black with his poem, Border Collie Soliloquy. You can learn more about Baxter Black and his poetry by visiting our website at callingallpets.org. Calling All Pets is produced by Wisconsin Public Radio. Patricia McConnell is a PhD certified applied animal behaviorist and adjunct associate professor of zoology at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. Our producer is Cynthia Schuster. Our executive producer is Charles Monroe Kane. Brad Kohlberg is our technical director. And Leo Sidran composed our theme music. I'm Larry Mueller with Patricia McConnell, hoping you'll join us again next time for more Calling All Pets.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 1-800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0412P. More pet tips and advice for training new dogs or leaving pets home alone are available online at callingallpets.org. Our website also features a complete list of past guests and online archives of the program. The website, once again, is callingallpets.org.